I read the prophecies, Mordak said. Tinny Tuviel stopped dead, one hand wrist deep in a filing cabinet drawer. Well done. Bet your fingers sore. Mordak sat down on a footstool. The Iron Throne was all very well, but the front of the seat chafed the insides of his knees. "Ver drivel," he said. That got him a look, which he ignored. You can't have read them properly. You did make sure the book was the right way up. Half of them, Mordak said, are later interpolations, which is obvious, because they're written in New Low Elvish. You can tell by the increased use of the pluperfect subjunctive and the decrease in reliance on enclitic demonstratives. Any fool could see that, he added. Tinny Tuviel pursed her lips. Arguably, she said, though Uviel and Piccalilian, in their landmark paper in the Elvish Journal of Superior Thought, and half of the remaining half are about stuff that had already happened when they were written. Which, to my mind, isn't entirely honest. Still, what would I know? I'm only a goblin. Yes, you are. Talking of which, are you sure you looked up all the long words? You didn't just skip them? Which leaves, Mordak said, the other half of a half, which I'm guessing came from a different source. There, I'm prepared to concede. We might be onto something. Aha! Actually, Mordak said, and no doubt those needle ears picked up the slight change in his tone of voice. You didn't have to explain every damn thing like you do when you're talking to goblins. Which was nice. Actually, I'm a bit concerned. A bit? A bit, yes. Which is pretty hot stuff, bearing in mind that I'm a high VAT goblin, possibly the most dangerous life form you'll ever meet, and traditionally we don't even know the meaning of concern. Along with lots of other words. Traditionally, Mordak said. But on this occasion, I'm concerned, bordering on mildly apprehensive. He paused. If you feel you need to run away screaming and hide behind something, please do so now. No? Right, here we go. This nameless one. Bit of a piece of work, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Mordak refreshed his memory from the notes he'd jotted down on the back of a desiccated troll's ear. It says in the prophecies that he is the destroyer of worlds. He paused. That's not good. Quite. It's evil. Presumably you don't have issues with that. Yes and no. Mordak scratched his chin with his foreclaw. On the face of it, yes. Destroying worlds is a perfectly legitimate evil activity, and one which, as Dark Lord, I might feel obligated to go along with. She was grinning. I can feel a spurt of new evil coming along, she said. Do go on. Yes, all right. There's no need to get all letters to the editor at me. I'm just saying. Destroying worlds. Is it really in the best interests of evil, in the sense that we've come to understand the word? Or is it, in fact, misguided and downright counterproductive? I feel we need to ask these questions. I bet you do. For example, Mordak went on, let's start with a basic and widely accepted definition of evil. The greatest harm to the greatest number. You're all right with that, presumably.
It'll do, I suppose.
Fine. So, you've got this world, on which a large number of people are living, let's say, for the sake of argument, peacefully, and in a state of moderate contentment. With me so far?
I think I can just about get my head around that, yes.
And then someone comes along and destroys this world. Blows it up. Hits it with a fallen star, whatever. All the people die. Evil?
Definitely so, I'd have thought.
Ah, Bordax said eagerly. But is it? Let's go back to our definition. The greatest harm to the greatest number. A planet is destroyed. Millions are snuffed out in the blink of an eye. Do you see where I'm headed? She frowned.
Frankly, no.
In the blink of an eye, he repeated. No lingering in pain and dread. Most of them won't even know what hit them. No suffering, no agony, it's practically merciful. Probably they're better off in the long run.
You know, maybe you're reaching just a teeny bit there.
I don't think so, Mordax said robustly. Phut, and you're gone. Never even knew you were in trouble. Where's the evil content in that? Also, once that world's been snuffed out, it means that there'll be no more people. No more people, no more misery, unhappiness, and grief. If we look at it in terms of productivity quotients, taking the Malon as our standard unit, a world of 6 billion people produces, what, 80 billion Malons of evil per annum for 50,000 years? Okay? That's 24 million billion Malons. All right? Destroy that world in one fell swoop. Agreed, that's pretty bad, but 24 million billion Malons worth of bad? I don't think so. 10 million billion Malons. Tops. That's a net loss to the cause of the Great Darkness of 14 million billion Malons. Call that evil, because I don't.
Shouldn't that be Mala?
The greatest harm, Mordak went on, to the greatest number. Again, the figures just don't add up. Let's go back to our planet of 6 billion people. That's 6 billion at any one time. But they have kids. They die. Over the course of, say, 3 ages, we're looking at 10,000 billion people. Trash the world at a point, say, halfway through the second age, that's 5,000 billion people who'll never have the opportunity to encounter or experience evil. 5,000 billion potential customers thrown away. Hardly, he added, beaming. The greatest possible number. So, as far as both halves of the definition are concerned, this Joker isn't evil at all. He's a bloody philanthropist. Tinnituvial looked at him for a moment with what could almost have been admiration.
And you thought up all that by yourself? That's so sweet.
Counterproductive, Mordax said firmly. Counter-revolutionary and downright heretical. This nameless one isn't on our side at all. Therefore, he's the enemy.
And therefore isn't entitled to your job, agreed. She tucked a stray wisp of hair behind her ear. I really like this new evil. It can be anything you want it to be. Which is good, she added, as Mordak glowered at her. Flexible. Adaptable. Therefore, instantly relevant to the needs of modern society. Or not having your head chopped off, as the case may be.
Mordak shrugged ruefully. Well, there's that consideration too. But I genuinely believe I happen to be the right orc for the job. I mean, look at the progress we've made. Giant leaps forward in free health care, housing, education, employment. She nodded.
Evil jobs for evil workers.
There wasn't much of that sort of thing going on under my distinguished predecessor, Mordack pointed out with a certain degree of feeling. And by the sound of it, he and this nameless twit are practically interchangeable. I mean, take that other bit in the prophecies. He will plunge all the realms into darkness impenetrable. He shook his head sadly. Oh dear.
Not keen?
I should say not. Look, I've just spent a hell of a lot of time, effort and money trying to improve our image, so that when people hear Goblin and Dark Lord, there isn't that instant knee-jerk reaction. Oh, them, the bad guys, the nasty party. I've bust a gut trying to make the dwarves and the humans and, heaven help me, your lot, realize that just because we have our ideological differences, that doesn't mean we can't work together constructively in those areas we can agree on, such as trade, communications, the environment, all that stuff. Then along comes some frothing at the mouth, born-again reactionary, and turns all the lights out. Result? Years of painstaking diplomacy down the toilet in a matter of seconds. That's what some people just don't seem to realize. Evil can no longer afford to regard itself as some sort of monolithic isolationist bloc. It's got to get out there and start a meaningful dialogue with a greater community of species and ideologies. Evil, right or wrong, just won't cut it anymore. I do wish people could see that. It's so blindingly obvious.
Quite, Tinny Tuvial said. And if she was smirking, she had the grace to turn her head away a little. So that's decided. We don't like the Nameless One. And we don't want him in our backyard. Fine. What are you going to do about it?
Mordack frowned. There, I think we have a problem. These prophecies.
Hmm?
Well, he made a vague, resigned gesture. They're prophecies, aren't they? Not warnings, not this is what'll happen if you don't pull your claw out and deal with it. More like, well, statements of fact, really. The Nameless One will arise, and so on and so forth.
Tinny Tuvial smiled. That's not how it works.
Mordack looked up hopefully. Isn't it?
The Art of Prophecy, Lesson 1. Feel free to take notes, by the way, because this is proper elf stuff, and you may find it hard to follow. Prophecy, she went on, is, as you say, a statement of fact. The following things will happen.
See? That's what a
provided, she went on firmly. A certain, precisely defined set of circumstances arise. Note the word precisely. The prophecy can only come about if all the requirements are exactly fulfilled. If there's just one thing that isn't exactly right, then the whole deal's off. The prophecy goes into a sort of holding pattern and stays up there hovering until the great wheel of destiny comes full circle and the circumstances are sort of attracted to it, like iron filings to a magnet. That, she added impressively, is the wisdom of the elves, handed down from generation to generation.
To explain why so many of your prophecies don't actually work?
Precisely. Which means, she continued, if the prophecy says the great dawn will come about when an iron frog sits on a blue lily pad in the dead centre of the lost lake of Dimmysmithduin, it's no earthly good if the frog's copper, or the lily pad's mauve, or if an iron frog sits on a blue lily pad 18 inches to the right of the dead centre of the lake? The prophecy takes one look at it, says, does not compute, and wanders off and amuses itself for another 10,000 years. Which means, she went on, that if for some reason a person has a vested interest in a prophecy not coming true, it's usually no big deal to make sure it doesn't. Mordack gazed at her with big, round eyes.
Straight up.
Elf's honour. All that stuff, she added, is not widely known for obvious reasons. There's a lot of money and kudos in the making sure bad things don't happen sector. So it wouldn't do if people realized just how easy it is. But it can't be terribly difficult, or elves couldn't do it, Mordack said happily. Or humans, even. Probably explains why your lot keep winning, comes to that. Something must, he added bitterly. But anyway, what you're saying is, if we can snafu just one condition of the prophecy, this nameless one can go take a running jump.
Very good. She clapped her hands together twice.
Now then, I take it you've made a detailed analysis of the conditions set out in the prophecy. You have, haven't you?
Yes, actually. Mordack pulled another shriveled troll's ear from the top of his boot. 1. A great portal shall open. 2. She who should never have been born will rise up among the chosen people. 3. The children of Fleur will leave the golden land, lit by another sun, and pass through the gate of flower and eggs, and occupy the high places and the low places and the seat of seeing, and they shall speak to those who are here and yet not here through the stone of Snawdor that rests in Shanad-dûm. 4. Those who dwell in the low places will forsake the old ways and be turned around and will answer the call.
He paused.
Have you got any idea what that's all about?
Not a clue. Go on.
And finally, 5. He who made all things will rattle the small stones together in the place of great tidiness and fall the wrong side of a dot. And the hour of some word nobody's ever managed to translate will be at hand. That's it. Mordack added, turning the dried ear over to make sure there was nothing on the other side. That's all we have to go on. Well?
What's the word you can't translate?
He pointed. She craned her neck and peered.
Looks like Arxit, she said.
What does that mean?
No idea. She grinned at him.
Tell you what, she said. If you can't banjax just one thing out of that lot, I'm a cave troll. He relaxed a little. So you're not too worried, then?
Oh, I'm worried, all right. I'm worried because the fate of the realms depends on a goblin doing something right, no matter how easy or trivial. But I reassure myself with the thought that the goblin in question has a wise elf to advise him. And by and large, he's been trained to do as he's told.